All right, welcome to the very last super section ever for fall 2007. How's that for dramatic? So this is meant to be whatever you guys want it to be honest. So we can either do this purely Q&A based, we can do it sort of lecture based where I push more information at you, but I suspect since you're here, you probably don't want more new information, but maybe if anything, review of expected information. Yay, nay?
Yeah.
All right, so maybe just a quick list to guide me. Are there specific topics or subject questions that you want to make sure we hit? Everything? Okay.
So, like, when we mix PHP code with HTML, like in index.php, can we go over something?
Sure. Okay. So, everything. We'll do a quick overview first and then get some more specifics. So, mixing XHTML and PHP.
SQL to
list. Sure. So we'll put that in. So we'll do more specific SQL stuff. Okay. And Chris?
That's pretty good for now.
Yeah? All right. I mean, that's pretty much is. Ken got pretty much everything here, right? So let's start with everything. And please stop me and interject at any point, because the point is not for me to hear myself talk, but for you guys to get useful information. And also feel welcome to get up and leave at any point, especially if you'd rather go work with David Ramos one-on-one on the actual problem set. That's totally fine. He should be over in office hours. So no hard feelings. But otherwise, I think we'll plan on ending no later than 7:30 officially. So you can set your minds that way. Okay, so the first step of, is it helpful to do this discussion by way of the problem set, perhaps, in that context? Okay. So let me just pull that up so that we have it for reference. And just so I have my expectations set, which of you guys have read some or all of the problem set? Okay. So that's why Ken suggested everything, huh? Okay. All right. So fair enough. For the most part, I'll assume that you're generally familiar with the purpose of this problem set. Come on in. I figured you would certainly be here. Come on in. And I don't know your name, I think. What's your name?
Vic.
Vic? Okay.
I'm
just the guy. Oh, okay. So that's my excuse. But we have Wani, Lucy, Ken, Chris, and Zin here. This is Jansu. All right, so we're for you guys who just came in, we're going to be covering everything today, and then we'll hone in on some more specifics. So the problem set is structured into two main parts, the first of which is actually pretty small and bite-sized. The first part of the problem set asks you to make your first web page on the internet. We don't care what it looks like, what it contains, what it says. It can be completely minimalist, like Hello World, but the only requirement we ask is that you make it well-formed, valid XHTML, which is a bit annoying sometimes because, as you'll experience for yourselves, you have to be more careful with your syntax and opening and closing tags in the right order, for instance, but it's just a good habit to get into in a very safe domain. We're less worried about validity when it comes to the CS50 finance parts. That part you can focus more on the PHP stuff and the SQL stuff. So with that said, the very first thing you guys are going to do in this problem set is run a few commands as usual. And I think you'll find the first couple pages do walk you through the process of copying things over to your directory, but I'll give you a verbal sense of really what's going on. So thus far, you guys have been playing in your FAS accounts. I'm using our CS50 student account. Is this legible from where you are? Yep, okay. So you know that you've had a CS50 directory for quite some time. That looks like that. But now we're going to start playing in another directory called public HTML. And as the name suggests, everything in here is going to be public, which is conceptually what we want because this stuff's supposed to end up on the internet. So among the commands you'll type for this problem set is mkdir public HTML. And that's going to create this directory, much like you've created other directories. Inside of that, you're going to create a CS50 directory, and actually let me take a step back. We provide you with a command called CS50 webify, which is actually a command that's automating this process. But I'm showing you the details just so that it's not magic, but it's just very simple, boring stuff that we've saved you the trouble of having to do. So this command's also going to make a CS50 directory inside of there, so that ultimately what you have in CS50, and let me move some of this stuff out of here so it looks like yours, you have this CS50 directory inside of public HTML, and then just to be neat and tidy, this command's also, the instructions are going to have you copy the PS7 directory on over into that. And to make this a bit more legible, let me go in here and change the shade of blue that we're using. Note that didn't take. Change the shade of blue. Still not taking. Oh well. All right. Okay, so at the end of the story, and at the end of the few steps, you guys are going to copy over your PS7 directory, and inside that directory are going to be a few files. There's a couple directories and a few files, namely, sorry, let me clean this up because we were playing with it in class. You're going to see these files in these directories. So inside your PS7 directory, to be clear, there's a CSS directory, which is where your cascading style sheet stuff will go if you choose to use it. But our expectations are low. We're not requiring that you do anything fancy. An images directory that has, for instance, the logo, the Google-like graphic that we gave you guys. INC, which just stands for include, and this is just a convention so that we can keep things nice and neat. We put files that aren't meant to get accessed directly by users, but rather included, much like header files, inside this directory. And then everything else represents a page in CS50 Finance that we've given you by default. And now recall that the default file name for most websites is what? index.html. But because you guys are making a dynamic website for CS50 Finance, and by dynamic I mean its content changes, which makes sense given that it's a stock portfolio tool, the default file name is actually going to be index.php. And we have, by way of that CS50 Webify command, configured your accounts in such a way that the server knows to look not only for index.html, but if it's not there, look for index.php instead. So that's a useful trick. So thus ends the first couple pages of the problem set once you have those few directories configured and you're sort of ready to go now with the actual functionality of the problem set. And one of the first commands that it walks you through, and this is in number 2 of the problem set, rather not number 2, just number 1 in the problem set, is it asks you to use nano and go into this INC directory. And notice there are a bunch of files in here. And the problem set does try to hold your hand through walking through these files, just because it's a lot to glance at first. But the only one we care about for the moment is this one called constants.inc. And as you might imagine, inside of this file is just a bunch of PHP constants that are going to be used by CS50 Finance to configure it in a personalized way, so that it's your copy and not, say, the staff's. So there's this set of instructions in the problem set that tell you to go look up your username, your database's name, your username's name, and your password for your database. And you do this by visiting a certain URL on the website. It asks you to log in with your Harvard ID and PIN. And then it says, here's your username, password, and database name. And you just literally copy and paste it into this file. And I've done that here. I'm obviously not being very secure, because now you know what CS50 Studs password is. But frankly, there's not all that much interesting you can do with it. But you paste this file, and that makes your copy of CS50 Finance yours. So it's your database. And any changes you subsequently make affect you and only you, and not your classmates. And the end result of pasting that in is that you can then pull up the following URL. You can go to www.people.fas.harvard.edu/tilde/whatever-your-username-is/cs50/ps7. So the only thing that's not in your URL is what directory that we've just talked about. There's a directory we created verbally that we said everything needs to go inside, but it's clearly not even mentioned in the URL. Yeah, so that public HTML directory is so named for convenience, but it doesn't actually appear in the URL. And that's sort of sensible, because it'd be kind of stupid if everyone's websites had a public _HTML as part of the address. But notice that when you say tilde username and then stuff after that, that implies to the web server to go look inside of your personal public HTML directory. Right? And inside of that, remember, we made a CS50 directory, and inside of that, a PS7 directory. Agreed? Yeah, okay. So what happens when we visit this thing? Well, if I go over to an actual browser and I pull up CS50 studs address, so it's small, but all I've done is paste that same URL that I just had in the WordPad and hit enter, assuming you've pasted your username and password in correctly, what you're going to see is this, which looks just like our copy of CS Finance for the moment, but this happens to be yours. And it turns out that one of the default accounts we created for all of you guys, we, in the form of this database you're getting from us, have access to some dummy usernames and passwords just so that you have something useful to do with the site at first. Dhelmet, denoting dark helmet, and then the password 12345 is a default username password we gave you. And if you log in, unfortunately, that's where we stopped doing any work. And here now is where you guys get to begin your implementation of this project. So that was sort of a mouthful, but any questions on sort of the overall framework here? Yay, nay? Okay. So, yeah?
You were using commands and lectures like the Jamad and other things like that.
Mm-hmm.
When did those sort of come off when you first used them?
Sure. So for super sections purposes, let me say this. Anytime you guys create a file for this problem set, and by that I mean with Nano, or you upload like an image from your Facebook profile that you want to put on your web page, any file at all that you want to put on your website for CS50 Finance or your homepage, after you create it or upload it, you have to run one command called fix web files, one word. And this is a automated version of the chmod command you just referred to. And just for arcane reasons, let me explain chmod afterward if that's okay, or over email. But the simplest way by far is to write this command fix web files, which whose purpose in life is just to make sure that all of your files are not only viewable by you, but anyone else in the world. They're only writable, that is changeable by you, but they're readable by anyone on the internet. And that's obviously a good thing. Because if you've ever visited a website and you've gotten some message like forbidden, what that means is that whoever's hosting that website didn't do the equivalent of this fix web files idea. They didn't set the permissions correctly. Okay, so that let's pause our discussion of CS50 Finance, because that was just about getting your framework set up and making sure that you're good to go after just the first couple pages of the problem set, and now revisit this issue of your website. So your website is ultimately going to be at a URL that looks like this. So same thing, but no CS50 and no PS7, because the purpose of this is to give you guys something that you can have linger around well beyond the course if you're not completely embarrassed by what you put together. So this is the URL of most anyone's website on FAS's computers, right? So even mine, it does exist, it redirects, but if I just paste in mail into this, as I'm sure some of you stalkers have done over time, and you visit my address, it goes to, oh, it's actually broken. That should not be there. Okay. Well, it at one point redirected to my actual homepage, which is written in HTML. And I will have to go ahead and fix that, since there's probably some stuff in there that shouldn't be there. Okay. So what does this mean for you? Well, the first real part of the problem set has you doing the following. It has you going back into your public HTML directory only, which was that newly created directory. And what you're expected to make is a file called index.html. And by far the simplest way to get up and running with this thing is, for instance, as follows. I'm going to go over to the course's website for a moment. And I know that it was in week 10 that we introduced this stuff. And we had some source code. Actually, it was week 9 that we first introduced this stuff. And we had that hello.html example, which was pretty darn simple. You should know now that in a PC at least, or even a Mac, if you hold Control, you can right-click and choose View Source and see the HTML or XHTML for a website. If I copy and paste this into Nano, it's ugly. Pay no attention to the trick I'm about to do. Simpler if you type it character for character. I'm going to save time and do that. So now I have index.html. It looks identical to what I did in lecture. And I really need to fix the colors here, because this is not readable. Give me 1 second, use color scheme. All right, we'll just make it white for now. So this is just copied and pasted. So I'm going to go ahead and save this in Nano. And then I'm going to go ahead and go back to my website and pull up CS50 stud, enter. But there's a problem. So what's the problem? So you need this fix web files command, right? Chmod is the more technical way of doing it, but the easier way, the automated way that we've given you guys, is to run fix web files, enter. Didn't seem to do anything, but now if I go back to my browser and hit reload, whatever browser you're using, still broken. What? Oh, now it's because I have a typo. My URL is not cs50stud/cs50stud, but now if I view the right URL, bam, hello world. Now let's take a look at this file. quite literally, frankly, it satisfies the letter of the law to just go ahead and implement this. But presumably, some of you guys will be slightly self-incentivized to actually make something slightly more interesting. So let's just do a couple of tweaks to this thing. What's a simple thing we can do to a web page to spice this thing up? Tell me what to make it look like. OK, so let's change the background color. One way in which we can do this is we can actually specify background equals quote unquote, or rather, not background, BG color. And I would know this just by looking it up on like the W3 Schools tutorial or asking someone, how do you change the color of a web page's background? BG color equals quote unquote what? Sorry?
Yellow.
Oh, that's, yeah, we already made one this ugly in class. Okay, so I'm going to save it in Nano. That's fine. Go over here, hit reload. What's going on? What's that? So we don't need to run fix web files here, but have I put this in the right place? What is it that we want to make yellow?
Underbody.
Yeah, so I was actually trying to save myself pedagogically there. I screwed up. It needs to go in body, BG color. Is part of the body because we want to control the color of the body, not the page, which is more of a conceptual entity. So I just resaved it, reload, and now it's yellow. Let's sex it up ever so slightly more. What else you want to do? Okay, make the text red. We can do this in a few ways. One way, as you'll see in some of our examples or in an online reference, is you can say div, which is a division, like make a separate part of the page conceptually, like a box around it, even though it's an invisible box. And let's say color, colon, is red, you said, semicolon, close quote, whoops. And now, I can't just leave it at this in order to keep it clean. What do I need to do? Yeah, so you need to close the tag as well over there.
Why can't you just use the line break and then change the style color?
Change the style color where? What do you mean line break?
Instead of using the div tag, why can't you just put two line breaks like to separate it from? Like, I don't understand what the point is.
Oh, what you need div for? So div is this increasingly popular convention whereby for every different chunk of a web page, you just call it a div, even though the aesthetic difference here is meaningless. Another approach is to actually use a span tag, but frankly, I think we're going to start confusing things. However, there's an older way. So this approach I just took here with div is sort of the newer way of designing websites using cascading style sheets, because even though it's not in a separate file, this is an instance of CSS. And frankly, it's not important, and it's not all that enlightening for you guys to understand the first week you play with this stuff, the difference between XHTML and CSS. It completely suffices to just pick some of this stuff up as you go. But know that the old-fashioned way of doing this was to say font color equals red, and then say hello world, close font. So you might see this online as well. Either gets the job done, so either is acceptable. And if we go and reload, now we just see the same thing twice. And in fact, if I want to make one of these bigger, I can say something like font size equals 72 point. Go ahead and save. And now that one's even bigger. So long story short, just by honestly, I can't emphasize enough, the way you learn this stuff best is not by taking a course in it. It's just looking at other people's examples and looking online. It's really not worth, I think, spending or taking a class on how to make a web page. It's more interesting to generate web pages like we're doing with the finance part of the problem set. Okay. So any questions on concepts or specific?
Okay.
So here.
So why do you need a semicolon after the color but not the one after yellow?
Not the one after yellow. So again, this is a nuance. So CSS, cascading style sheets, which is sort of a language unto itself, is used either in a separate file, as we've discussed with styles.css. Or it goes inside of the value of the style attribute. That is the only place, for the most part, where you can put CSS. So anything else, even if it relates to color, is just old-fashioned XHTML. And that's the difference. So, and again, please don't get tripped up on these kinds of details, especially when it's the fun part of the assignment, I think, is the finance part. Or if you really want to make a personal homepage, then run with it. That's fine. But don't feel like there's a lot you need to understand for this first part. It's really just meant to be a warm-up exercise. Yeah, Zen?
So online, they have this thing where you can just open and close in the same bracket.
brackets, mm-hmm. like br space and then slash. Would that be acceptable?
Yes. So because every tag in XHTML has to be both opened and closed, so there are some tags for which it just doesn't make conceptual sense to open them and then close them. Like, what does it mean to start a line break and then end a line break? It's either there or it's not. And so what a line break looks like is that. Or you can say br, close br, but that just feels kind of silly. It's fine, but it feels silly. Another one is a horizontal rule, hr, which means make a horizontal line across the page. And if I reload, that's what that does. And that too, either it's there or it's not. You can't start it, put something in the middle of the line, and stop it, at least in this case. Okay. Sure.
If you do a new paragraph and just type words, the words just keep on going. I mean, the sentences just keep going and just go to overflow to the next line. It doesn't look very nice because they don't line up. Does that matter?
No, I mean, as we say in the spec, worry more about correctness than style or design for this problem set, because there's only so much that we want to push at you the first time you do this stuff. And the fact of the matter is, it is hard to generate pretty HTML, especially dynamically. I mean, frankly, if you want to just infer from our own example, if I go to the course's website and view the source, I mean, frankly, this is far from pretty compared to, say, some of the C code you guys have been asked to write. I mean, it's actually not bad, but clearly these lines are long. But I would argue that there's no reason, that it needs to be read by a computer at the end of the day. And so it's not as important that things be, say, 80 columns wide.
So don't worry about lines.
Don't worry about them. Okay, other questions about the basics of XHTML and this fixed web file stuff and what to do with it, where it goes? Yes, no? Yeah, Jensu? Is that what? HR, horizontal rule, which just means a line. Yep. Other questions? No? Okay. So let's segue now to everything some more and go back to our CS50 directory and PS7 directory and take a look at those files there. So we're not doing very well with the colors here. Let's change it to that. And it's not really helping us. Okay. All right. So let's begin our story where we left. Well, let's resume our story where we left off. When I was last on this page, recall that I was on CS50 stud, and then I was in CS50/PS7, and that led me to this login page. Okay, so what's going on here? So notice, it's small, but can any of you see the URL I'm at now? What's the name of the file?
Login.php.
Okay, so login.php, but wait a minute. When I visited this URL that ends in PS7, that is this thing, that implies what file name?
Index.php,
and yet if I copy-paste this, I seem to end up in login.php. So what's going on? Well, let's take a look at index.php. So index.php, notice, first has this so-called shebang at the very top line. Any PHP file you write on www.people.fast needs to start with this line. Just has to. So copy-paste it from one of the existing files. Notice then that I have this require once function. It's a little hard to read, but it says require once, and we put this there for you. And what that's saying is require this file. And so think of this as sharp include foo.h, that kind of idea from C. So that's just making available all the stuff in here in this file. What was in there? Well, all of those constants, the name of my database, the name of my password, and so forth. Now, technically, we don't really need it in this file, but we wanted to give you a very simple, straightforward framework where every page looked almost the same, so we just kept it as simple as possible and put that atop every file. All right, so what's next? Well, notice that even though we have open bracket quote or open bracket question mark, and question mark close bracket, what's the rest of this file apparently? Yeah, it's just XHTML. So ultimately, this is a pretty simple looking page, but, and notice, in fact, what does it say? Well, here is a image, the img tag, which we saw briefly in lecture. The value of that source attribute appears to be this file called logo.gif, which is in the images subdirectory. So we promised that there would be a logo somewhere in that directory. Well, this is just that page that had that construction crew a moment ago that I finally saw once I logged in. So what it seems to be happening here is that when I try to visit my default home page or my default version of CS50 Finance, it feels like I'm being redirected from index.php to where, just to be clear? To login.php. So Facebook actually is very similar to this. If you get emailed a URL from a friend that's like a link to one of their photos and you haven't recently logged into Facebook, so you just copy paste that URL, where are you sent to on facebook.com? Yeah, you're not generally just shown the image that that your friend wanted you to see. Rather, you're forced to log in first, and then you're redirected perhaps to that URL, or if Facebook doesn't want to bother, then just to their homepage, and then you can repaste the URL. So what's going on behind the scenes, and we don't need to dwell on how it's working, is that among the things that this file does, and I'm sorry, I called this... This is common.inc, which is not the same as constants.inc, which we did look at earlier. One of the things this file does, which is quote unquote common to all of the pages you guys are making, is that there's a couple lines of code there that ask the question, if the user is not yet logged in, redirect them to login.php. Otherwise, let them pass. So by default, I'm obviously not logged into this program yet because I've never once visited it before starting working on the problem set. And so you're booted right away to login.php. Well, let's see what happens. If I go ahead and log in now as dhelmet, which is that default username and password you guys get for free, and 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and hit enter, that's going to actually very quickly go to another file, but then where do I ultimately end up? Index.php. So think of index.php as the true homepage for CS50 Finance, but you're not allowed to see it until you've logged in. And our code forces the user to log in, and we implemented the code that checks if the user has logged in, but now this is a dead end. And so the features that you guys are going to be implementing from this point forward are the ability to register new users, the ability to buy stocks, sell stocks, and just get a price quote for a stock. So four main modules, if you will. Now, how did this login module work? Because it's enlightening, because you can pretty much copy and paste the login module, rename it the register module, and then just add a few lines of code that tweak the behavior of login and turn it into registration. Well, let's take a look at how login was working. And again, this doesn't need to be a lecture, so please interrupt me or raise your hand if you have questions. So login.php aesthetically, recall, looked like this. So it's some kind of XHTML form and a submit button. Well, what does that look like behind the scenes? Well, if we look at it, again, we have this template at the top. We copied and pasted the same lines of code you guys saw a moment ago in index. What's the rest of this file, apparently? Yeah, it's just XHTML. So we're not using the PHP for all that much just yet. And actually, let me simplify this for one moment. Ignore what is being done before your eyes. Okay, so what we now have in front of us is just a whole bunch of XHTML, the result of which is to make this page. So how does this work? Well, notice this, and one of the first things the problem set has you do, just to point out what's going on, notice that here's the head of the page. So this is called the login page in the title of the window. Here is that logo stuff. So there's the image tag, and that just standardizes putting that logo at the top of every page. You guys can change that if you want. But then beneath that, it gets interesting. What's this thing here? Perhaps needless to say. Right, this is one of these forms. So the means by which web pages work that take input from users is they take input by way of these things called forms. And a form can have text boxes, check boxes, radio buttons, real buttons. I mean, you guys have all used forms before, even if you've never coded one up. So how do these things work? Well, the most important thing you need to do for a form is specify where the data therein should get submitted to. So when the user clicks that so-called submit button, where does all of the things the user's typed in get sent? Well, in this case, they're getting sent to what file? This guy here. So login2.php. We could have called this anything, but conceptually, we thought it was simplest to let students think that you start at login, you hit submit, where do you go? Login2. It's step 2. And then from there, you go elsewhere. So how is this working? Well, just because we wanted to be a bit anal and make things look pretty, we used one of these tables, but set its border equal to 0, which means make it invisible effectively. But if I change this, the 0 to a 1, and then hit save, and then reload this page, notice that the way we made this thing look nice and pretty, like Facebook really, is we have just a 2-row, 2-column table, and in each of those so-called cells is either the label or the actual text field. And this is just a common trick for making things pretty. If I didn't have this, you might have something, it would still work just fine, but it might say something like name, colon, and then a box. But because the word password is longer, it might say password, colon, and then it just looks kind of silly when things don't line up, right? That's just not good style. So we use one of these invisible tables just to be anal about it. But it's all aesthetic. Okay? More important, though, is where what's being submitted. So notice that most of this stuff is table. Table tag TR stood for what in class? Table row. Table row. So this means, hey, browser, start making a row here. TD is table data, which means make a cell, make an entry in the column. But the interesting part of this table is that inside of it is pieces of the form. So this thing here, recall, is the typical way that you define one of these text boxes. Why is it text box? It's of type equals text. And just so that I, the programmer, know what to expect, I need to give it a name. So username in this case. If I want another field, I better give it another name, like I would give another variable another name so that I can distinguish the two. But this one, I don't want the user to see, right? So I want to call it password. And by calling it password means that when the user starts typing, there are little circles instead of clear text. But it's still the same data, it's just not being shown. Finally, what's the last thing I need in a form to get it submitted?
Button,
right? This is old school, right? If you've ever used a web page, you know this. So the other type of input that this page uses is input type equals not text but submit, and then the value is just whatever is shown on the button. For instance, log in. Or really log in now. If I save and reload that, that just changes what the button looks like. Right? Silly, but easy. All right, so now remember that the point of this whole thing is to submit the data somewhere. The action attribute tells you where it's going to go. And then the only other thing to note is that there's two primary methods by which you can submit data, via get, so to speak, or via post. And really, the only compelling thing to bear in mind as you begin this process is, well, what's the main difference we pointed out in class between get, method get and method post? Yeah? Other way. Yep. So, exactly. So if you use method equals get, which is sort of the quick and dirty way of getting data to a program online, it puts everything in the URL. And it says URL, question mark, variable equals value, ampersand. Variable equals value, ampersand. Well, what do I mean by that? Well, let's take a look, actually. Right now it's post. I'm going to change this to get, all lowercase. I'm going to save it, reload the page. The page looks the same at this point, but notice that if I view the source with IE, notice it's a little small, but notice the border is back to 0. And if I scroll down, notice that the method is also get. So these changes I'm making in Nano are really propagating to the World Wide Web. It's not a fake demo. All right, so let's go ahead and log in as dhelmet. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Well, this is good, right? It's bullets, so no one looking over my shoulder can see what I'm typing. I click really log in now. What just happened to the URL? My URL just became that. And it's wrapping on lines. But notice it is, as expected, for get. File name, login2.php, question mark, variable equals value, and variable equals value. The problem is if you did this in a computer lab or logging into Facebook in this way, if Facebook used get instead of post, is that you leave this little trail of evidence on every browser you use. Because odds are at least one of you has, on some computers, some friend's computer one day, clicked the little history bar to see where they've been, or you accidentally saw where they've been. Well, the problem with this case, oh, there you go, see, it's true. The problem with this is that this is leaking information when it doesn't have to. So post gets the same data across the wire, but it hides it. It doesn't put it in the URL. For our purposes, it tucks it away in the TCP/IP message that gets sent across the internet, but not so obviously as in the URL. So let's go back to that form. Let's fix that back to post, save and reload. The form still looks the same, but now let's log in as dhelmet, 12345, enter. And as you know, enter is almost always equivalent to clicking the default button on the page. And now I'm back to the home page. So at this point in the story, in the problem set spec, to be clear, I mean, it's 24 pages of tutelage, more than it is 24 pages of problems to do, walks you through the problem, walks you through all the source code up until this point. And at this point, it invites you to implement the first module that you need to, which is the registration module. So just conceptually, if you want to register a user, what do you have to do? What information do you want to ask them for? You give them a username? Password, and you know, on a real website, maybe their name, their email address, phone number, and that kind of fluffy stuff. Really, all we need is username and password. All right, so let's do that. What the problem set spec has you do is something like the following. You know how to use the copy command, CP, presumably. So I'm going to just jumpstart this process by copying login.php and calling it register.php. I'm going to run fix web files to make sure that that new file is also available on the internet. And again, to be clear, this the spec will tell you to do this. And now I'm going to go to not login.php, but watch this, register.php. Okay, I'm going to copy that and paste it into my browser. And while, did I get redirected? No. A guy who's not in CS50, why? What's going on? You're shaking your head. No, I did provide the location, and it's small to see, but in fact, I am here. So why does it look like we're on the login page?
Because you just copied all of the extension.
Right. Right? All I did was copy the file, so it stands to reason that it's the same thing, it's just named something different. So let's resolve this. Let's go into register.php, which looks identical to login.php, as is the case with a copy. Let's scroll down. And just make it very obvious, like doing this, there's, let's say, the H1 tag here, and say this is register, just to do a sanity check, save that, go back to the same URL. Okay, so in fact, we are in fact changing the right file. Okay, we'll get rid of that now. What do I want to do? Well, I want to ask the user for a username, and it turns out it's already there, right? I want to ask the user for a password, and that is already there. But the problem set does advise you to add one more field, just as most websites do, so that they don't have to deal with users forgetting their passwords or mistyping them the very first time. What do most websites do? Yeah, you have to retype it. A little annoying, but arguably it saves people a headache later. So the easiest way to make another form field, frankly, is to note that these four lines are pretty much the same thing that you want again. So I'm going to go ahead and copy those four and just paste them. But I can't just leave it like this. First, I'm going to just make sure the user realizes what's going on. So we'll say password again. But what else do I need to change for this to be useful? Change the what? Yeah, the input name. So the variable name, so to speak, had better change, because if it's identical, how am I going to distinguish them when I receive the data? Right? The goal for the web server is to receive three different fields, username, the password, and then the retyped password. So they better have unique names, otherwise how would you even distinguish them? Right? So even though this is PHP, that's arguably just common sense at this point in the story. So let's save this, and now I'm not going to say really log in, but really register. Okay, and there's one other thing I need to change before I can move on to test this out and actually implement registration. What do I need to change in this file for this whole exercise to be fruitful? Yeah?
Where is the information going to?
Perfect. So where is the information going to go? Well, just make a guess as to what we've proposed you send the data to. Register2.php. You can call it anything you want, but we're just preaching simplicity. So call it register2 because it's step two in the registration process. Let's save it, go back to the web, reload, and now notice that we now have more of a form. Okay, so three fields, two of which look like password fields, one of which looks like a username field. And if I click this, what's going to happen? What's the problem? Right, so we haven't created register2.php. Well, I'll propose a quick way to get up and running here. Yeah, and we honestly preach as much in the spec because there's no better way to get up and running quickly than by just learning from your own previous work. So I'm going to call that copy login to and call it register to. And now I'm going to open register to, and it still looks the same and behaves the same as login, so we can't just call it quits now. Now we're going to have to go back in here and actually handle the process of registering the user. So let's take a step back now from the code. But let me pause if there are any questions, lest I have lost anyone. No? Okay. So what do we need to do in order to register a user? Just, you know, generally speaking. Yeah. Yeah, so we need to store their usernames and passwords somewhere. Otherwise, what does it mean to even register if we're not remembering it somewhere? Well, where are we registering it? Well, in this thing called a database, a SQL database. And how can you take a look at this? Well, what we've done for you guys is we went ahead in advance of distributing this problem set and created 283 separate databases. Each of them happens to be named the same as your own FAS username, just for simplicity's sake. And we randomly generated an ugly-looking password, like the one you saw for CS50 Stud. The way in which you guys find out what your unique username and password is we give you a URL in the problem set that tells you to go to a web page that looks like this. So the URL is in the problem set, but it says go to the course's website, go to MySQL, and you'll see a customized page like this. You're now looking at my password for my own personal database. There's nothing there anyway. And you'll see that there's a value for DB, DB user, and DB pass. And where did we see those before? Yeah, constants.inc. So remember that one of the first steps in the problem set had you copy paste these values just so that everything would start working with like Lord Darkhelmet's username and password so that you had something working. Well, now what you can do is revisit this and click this link to this tool called PHP MyAdmin. And the fact that this is written in PHP is a coincidence, but what's great about PHP MyAdmin is that it allows you to configure your own personal database with a nice graphical interface and not having to type very esoteric commands at the nice.fas prompt. Well, I'm going to go ahead and log in as CS50 stud, and I forget what my password is, but you guys just reminded me that it's in constants.inc. So I'm going to go copy it from there, paste it into this login form, and click go. And what I'm going to see is maybe if you've never seen it before, a little scary, but frankly, ignore all of that. It's irrelevant for the problem set. What the problem set does tell you to do is notice that you have at the top left of the screen a list of all of the tables that have been pre-created for you. Now, ignore the Frosh IMs, because remember that I used the same account in lecture the other day to create the Frosh IM sports stuff. But what you guys will all have is a database called whatever your FAS username is, and then one table called users. And if we click users, what we'll see is something similar. What we'll see these XHTML tables that tell you that this table called users has three fields. And just to be clear, what are these three fields called apparently? Yeah, username, password, and then UID, which just means user ID. And as I've mentioned a couple times in lecture, even though username probably needs to be unique anyway, and thus can be the unique identifier in your database for a user, that's a whole string. And we already know that comparing strings is certainly more expensive than just comparing an int. So what the world generally does is it gives every entry in a database, every row, so to speak, a unique number called an ID. We called it UID for user ID. And what we did was configure your database in such a way that you don't even have to care about UIDs. Anytime you guys insert a new username and password to this table, so to speak, the database creates a new unique number for that user by just adding one to the previous guy's ID. So it's convenient, and you don't have to deal with it. So notice a couple things. The data type for UID is an int, and that seems consistent with this idea of just using an efficient storage device for representing a user's ID. Username is a varchar. Think of this as a string in a database. 255 means the maximum length for this thing is 255. Password, same deal. It's kind of excessive, right? None of you guys are going to choose, odds are, a username that's 200 characters long, but we chose it as a default, and that's fine. And now, finally, notice that for UID, we said that this int is unsigned, and that's just a nice convention so that it's going to be 0, 1, 2, on upward, and that it is auto-incrementing, which means that it updates itself when you insert new entries. And this thing, to be clear, is called a primary key, and what that means is it uniquely identifies rows in your database. And that's going to be useful because in a moment, we'll consider exactly how you're going to retain the stocks that someone has bought and or sold. But for now, any questions on what our database for users looks like? No? All right, well, as the spec explains, notice this Browse tab up here. And again, phpMyAdmin, there's a lot of stuff you don't need to care about, and the problem set focuses your eyes on what you do need to care about. The Browse tab is one of them. And what this does, and it looks kind of sort of like Excel, like a spreadsheet here, this is showing you all of the usernames and passwords we installed into your database for you guys by default. So there's dhelmet, password 12345. We gave you George Costanza, Bosco is his password, and M. Scott from Michael Scott from The Office, whose password is from the show 1234. So we just had some fun with it just so that you guys would have some default accounts to play with, and the thing would work out of the box. But the design decision you guys have to make related to, here, this last story to be told, in your database is how do you go about remembering what stocks someone has bought? Moreover, how do you go about remembering how much cash someone has? Because if you played with CS50 Finance Online in the bigger board, you guys, the first time you register, are given $10,000, fake money, but you have to remember that somewhere. So what the problem set spec suggests that you do, actually, is go in first to your database and modify this table so that you associate with every user, not just the UID, username, and password, but what else? Take a guess. How much money they have. And we called it cash in the problem set spec, and it's just going to be like a floating point number so that you keep track of their value. And the idea is that with register, you're going to insert, say, 10,000.00 by default when creating a new user. But that's just cash. You also need to remember how many stocks and which stocks someone owns. Well, stock, long story short, if you're not familiar with the stock market, do read the little link that we give you that's a quick tutorial, or ask a friend who's taking Ec-10 or the like. It's not all that hard. It just means to buy a piece of a company in dollars. How are stocks uniquely identified? Yeah, by these acronyms, these symbols, like G-O-O-G is Google's, and Y-H-O-O is Yahoo's, M-S-F-T is Microsoft. So by these so-called symbols. So to remember what stocks a user has bought, it pretty much suffices to remember the symbols that they've bought, because you can store MSFT more efficiently than MICROSOFT and so forth. So just remembering the symbols is fine. You need to remember, though, for each symbol, how many shares the user bought, and you need to remember which user bought it. So what you're ultimately going to do, if you take our blatant advice in the problem set, is design a database much like we did, which is also going to have a few different columns, the first of which is going to be UID, so that you remember who owns what. The second of which is going to be symbol, although the order of these don't matter, doesn't matter. And then finally, shares, which is a number. So that if, for instance, Lord Darkhelmet, whose UID happened to be 1, buys Microsoft, you would store MSFT. And if he bought 10 shares, you would store 10 in this table. And it's a table because each of these purchases is represented with a row. So we don't give you this table. We suggest that you create this or something like it using phpMyAdmin. And suffice it to say, there's a command that lets you type in the name of a table and tell it how many fields you want, so to speak, and what data type those fields should be. In fact, what should the data type of UID be in this second table? Yeah, just an int, because it was before. And so the purpose here conceptually is, even though this is a separate table from users, you want to be able to somehow cross-reference users in the real users table and users who own stuff in this table. And the simplest way to do that is to remember it the least amount of information possible, which is this 32-bit int. UID. What data type should symbol probably be?
Varchar.
Yeah, probably a varchar. And most symbols are 4 characters, MSFT, but some are 5, some are 6, some are 8. So whatever, make it 255 and just leave it at that. Because it's varchar in the sense that that's the maximum size for the string. It doesn't necessarily take up 255 bytes in memory. So that's a nice thing for the database. Finally, shares, what data type? Yeah, probably just an int. So this next phase of the problem set, before you start implementing the ability to buy or sell or such, how do you design this table? And you can pretty much take our advice, and this is the advice we give you, but we leave it to students to come up with different designs if they want. But if you're among those less comfortable, by all means, just follow what our suggestions are and save yourself some stress. And you'll create this table with phpMyAdmin. But then you ultimately turn your attention back to the source code. Namely, you need to implement register2.php, and you need to implement buy and buy2.php, and sell and sell2.php, and then quote and quote2.php. And I know that might sound like a lot, because thus far you guys have created maybe 2 files for a problem set, 3 max, but as I've emphasized in lecture, the means by which to start writing each of these modules, to be honest, is to copy the one you just implemented a few minutes earlier, and then decide what you need to change. At least that's the way to do this while learning and teaching yourself this stuff. And as I promised in lecture, the amount of PHP code you need to write is relatively little for each of these modules. So by far, I would say a very reasonable rule of thumb is that login2.php, which we give you, is pretty representative of how much code you need to write for each of the modules in PHP. Granted, the XHTML is a little longer because it's aesthetic, but it's not as hard, I would say. The PHP code is where you think like a programmer, like a CS50 student, having studied this stuff for 10 weeks. So why don't we take a final look then at what login2.php is actually doing, and let it be representative of the type of code you guys will have to write for register to, and quote to, and buy to. Well, remember that the means by which we reach this file is when the user clicks submit on login.php. And when they click submit, this file gets executed because they're submitting to this file via their browser. Well, the very first thing login2.php does is it requires that common code. And that you just accept as fact. We've given you that, and we require that you can include that INC file in every page so that you have some functions, like a header file style, accessible to you. This first line here is saying store in a variable called username the return value of this crazy long function called MySQL real escape string, which is ridiculously named, but its purpose in life is to take the variable that a user has provided in a web page like this. So remember, they posted it, and it's called username. So this, quite simply, is the syntax you use to get at a variable called username that was posted. You need to, quote unquote, escape it so that someone doesn't try to mess with you and type in a username of delete star as opposed to dhelmet. Right? You don't want them to inject, so to speak, SQL commands. So you escape the username, you escape the password, and then now notice these 3 lines here. I'm preparing a SQL query. So SQL. A SQL query is just an expression written in this so-called SQL language, and the most typical type of query is to select information. So this query selects the user ID from the user's table where the username equals %s, which is just a placeholder. Think back to printf and scanf and the like from C, and password equals some other string. And then again, if you've ever used sprintf, remember that it just places the values of these variables into those placeholders. So at the end of the day, what we've just said quite simply, if that's not an overstatement, select UID from users where password equals dhelmet username equals dhelmet and password equals 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. In other words, those 3 lines of code, based on the user's input, create that string. And what do we do with that string? We save it in this variable called SQL, and then we quite simply pass it to this function called MySQL query, whose purpose in life is to pass that query over to this database. What you get back is called a result set. a bunch of rows. And so what I'm doing now in these last few lines of code is this. If the number of rows that was returned in that result equals 1, what's the implication? Well, what perfect. The person exists because this row got returned. One row, not anyone else, because there's no other dhelmet, and there's certainly no other dhelmet with that same password in there. So one row gets returned. So the implication conceptually at this point in the story is that the guy has authenticated correctly. What do we want to do? Well, I want to fetch the row specifically, and I'm going to tuck away all of the fields that were returned in this variable called row. And what I'm going to do now, and this we discussed briefly in lecture today, I'm going to remember the user's user ID in this super special, this super global variable called session that you have access to. And by that I mean anything you put in this special variable called session stays there for as long as the user has their browser window open. Even if they walk away for a few minutes, they come back and hit reload, your program, even though it stopped executing, will still remember what their user ID is, and it uses cookies, long story short. Yeah, and then Lucy. Yeah, Junsu? Or
is that the thing where, you know, if you log into, for example, my Harvard.edu, and if you don't do something really important, it adds a flip flop.
Exactly, the cookie expires after some number of minutes.
Yes,
that's exactly it. They didn't implement my.harvard, I don't think, in PHP, but other languages have the same idea. That is totally the same thing. Yeah, Lucy?
I was wondering, if we were trying to like access UID in a different file, how would we go about doing that? Do we do $_session UID?
Same thing. Exact same thing.
Oh, so that is actually just the variable UID?
Yep. Okay. In fact, remember earlier we said that every file that you're going to make includes common.inc? Well, notice that if we scroll down here, the way I am checking whether or not the user is logged in is this line. If the variable called UID in session is not set, redirect them to login.php. And so ultimately, looking finally at this file, after we check that they are in fact in the database, I remembered Lord Darkhelmet's UID in the session, here's why I then get redirected back to index.php. So for the tape's sake, why don't we officially adjourn here? But I will stick around for one-on-one questions if you guys have them.